interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, February 5th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. 2 hours for myself, Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D., to explore the space with you inside the 237 Roof Studios. No time to mess around. We're going to get right down to business. And there seems to be no business right now between the Pels and the Lakers. I'll share the latest and why it's starting to make me chuckle just a little bit. So we'll lead off with Anthony Davis. Right now, the NBA, they're getting exactly what they wanted. I know, the public image of all that tampering, the public demand of a trade, they kind of shook their fingers, Rafael Palmeiro style, at Clutch Sports Management, at LeBron James, at Anthony Davis. But right now, I think they're getting exactly what they want. And I'll tell you about the latest tug of war from the Big Easy over to the West Coast. 2 hour show. We've got a guest in each hour. At 4:30, Cody Warsham. He's the digital media reporter for LSU Sports. He's got a dynamite podcast. It's all about LSU basketball. And that's all our conversation is going to be about today. At half past this hour, LSU rebounding and shooting threes. At different points in this season, both have been areas of struggle for Will Wade's team. They're getting better in one area, the other, maybe not so much. Plus, how do they get off of that tightrope that Wade described so aptly in his press conference after the ball game on Saturday? How do they start quicker? How do they stop leaving it late? And then also how they match up with a tough Mississippi State team that they'll see tomorrow in Starkville. A lot of questions, and if anybody's got answers, it is Cody Warsham. Again, our only guest in hour number one. He'll jump on the show at 4:30. We're going to do things a little differently with Shea Dixon today, and I think for good reason. Only one segment, but think of it as Mickey D's. Like a decade ago. It's going to be supersized. We're going to have Shea Dixon at straight up 5 o'clock. No flip the script today. There's only one day left until, well, National Signing Day. Less than a day. And so we're going to let Shea wax on that and only that for a long extended segment today. So make sure you're with us at straight up 5 o'clock. Shea Dixon, go to 247.com, and we'll do something in this segment that we don't always offer. Shea had volunteered for it. He wants to answer your questions. So this time around, we've already got it up, 1037 The Game on Twitter. You can hit us on Facebook. You are welcome to call the program. You have an hour, and you've been put on notice. Get your LSU and National Signing Day recruiting questions in. Within the next hour, Shea will answer them live on the program. So no flip the script today. We don't need to get cute. We don't need any of that. We're just going to open up the show at 5 o'clock with Shea. He'll give you the latest on Ishmael Sopcich, Devontae Lee, and how the 6 spots that LSU has left are bound to be filled. The biggest question marks heading into tomorrow. And he'll answer your questions as well. So again, Twitter, Facebook, or call him in. 706-0111. Aside from that, we've got a little sink or swim that's coming your way in our next segment, LSU Baseball Fiend. Throwing Shade coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. LeVar Ball is going to set the record for most appearances in that segment. Like I said, a lot going on today. You want to get a call in, talk some Pels, Lakers, AD with me. Again, that number for the Artco Equipment Hotline, 706-0111. The Pelicans, according to a report from Adrian Wojnarowski of the Mothership, want to combine 4 draft picks out of this thing. That's their newest MO, at least for the Lakers, which are the only team that publicly acknowledges engaging right now with Dell Demps, Danny Ferry, and the Pelicans. I'm sure others are. We learned after the fact that the Knicks were in regards to Kristaps Porzingis before they dealt him over to Dallas. But the Lakers are the only ones publicly acknowledging that they're engaging. They're also the only ones with LeBron James. And so I think right now they are unrealistic in their expectations. But it's quite possible that the Pels are too. Because this report today, I think it guarantees that no deal gets done before Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And I can confirm now that that is the NBA trade deadline. So just a little bit shy of 46 hours from now. That's all that Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka have to get something done. And whereas the Lakers want to send over their poo-poo platter of average to pretty good but not great young players and over-the-hill veterans like Rondo, Lance Stephenson, that's not what the Pels want. They're more interested in draft picks. It sounds like, to me, they're more interested in stockpiling valuable assets to go after Zion Williamson, to go after one of the top two or three picks in the 2019 draft. And I think it's a great idea. Ideal situation, get a cornerstone young all-star a la Jason Tatum and get a top three pick. I don't think the Lakers are going to provide them with that opportunity. But what's funny to me is that the Lakers, they're waiting on a counter proposal right now. Imagine this is fantasy football. Just for a moment. Maybe that makes sense to all of us a little bit better than high-stakes NBA trades. But if this is fantasy football, basically, the Lakers have said, here are my third through six best players. And you know what? I'll throw in my opening round draft pick next year. Can I please, and I mean pretty please, have Michael Thomas? Is that okay? Is that something you could do? Or maybe even higher? Would it be okay if I went ahead and just took Todd Gurley from you? That's what they're trying to do right now. And as a smart fantasy football owner would do, Dell Demps, or rather somebody else, in the Pels organization is saying, no, that's not what we're going to do at all. We will give you Todd Gurley, but if we're going to do that right now, we want all of your draft picks. We want to cripple you, and we want to prop ourselves up. We want to be the one to take a Todd Gurley equivalent in the first round next year. But mercifully, Woj is also reporting that there is, quote-unquote, significant support within the Pels organization to let Thursday's trade deadline expire with AD remaining on the roster. Thank the big basketball guy upstairs for that. And I'm going to go ahead and interpret that, translate it for you, since I am fluent in basketballese. That is Woj saying that Danny Ferry and whoever else is not named Dell Demps is telling Dell, keep your hands out of the cookie jar, keep your hand away from the ladle, do not stir. And while you're at it, don't pass go. There is no $200 for you. You're going to be canned, and it won't be long from now. Thankfully, somebody else in the Pels organization is going to put the kibosh on something stupid happening before Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. All right, James, that's what I think. What do you think about everything with Anthony Davis?
Well, I kind of agree with you with the situation. Them taking Dell Demps away from, you know, trying to do a trade. But the Lakers would be stupid to give up four draft picks and the other pieces that were offered by Anthony Davis.
All right, the sound quality is just not where we need it there. James, apologize. Didn't mean to cut you at the knees there, but we had enough of sample size. We'll move on. Now, what I thought I heard you say is the Lakers would be stupid to give up four draft picks and all those young pieces. Well, yeah, I would agree with you. But I don't think that's exactly what the Pels are driving at. I don't think that's what Danny Ferry, Mickey Loomis, and non-Dell Demps figures in that building are driving at. I think what they're saying is, we don't want your poo-poo platter of players. What we do want are the draft picks. Now, we'll take Kyle Kuzma, Rajon Rondo, and the four picks, that's fine. Or we'll take Brandon Ingram, Lance Stephenson, and the four draft picks, that's fine too. But we don't want your smorgasbord of players who clearly you don't even want. Let's not lose sight of that. LeBron is doing everything he can to jettison the other guys, the ones that aren't going to help him win a championship. And look, I'll end the segment with this because I saw something that was just so good. I mean so good, on Twitter a couple of days ago. And I'll give the credit here. Damon Rangula, you can follow him on Twitter, at D-A-M-A-N-R. This, I think, encapsulates it pretty well. The LeBron experience, colon, he won't play at the five position. He's not going to defer. He'll want his coach. He's going to basically want the young guys traded, et cetera, et cetera. It's all come true. None of these things are good or bad. They're all about trying to win, but they, the people in Cleveland and Miami, were right. Doesn't that hit it on the head? If you want LeBron, there are certain things that come with the LeBron experience. I don't know that him being known as a coach killer is fair. The only guy he really killed off, I think, was David Blatt. They brought in Ty Lue, and then they upset the Warriors. So for me, I don't think that's necessarily true. But the other things are, LeBron is going to play on the perimeter. LeBron does kind of want to be the alpha dog, understandably. He has that quality, whereas Anthony Davis, probably even Kevin Durant, don't. But when he goes places, he wants to trade away those young assets, and he wants proven guys. So all of that experience is coming true. Possibly against my better judgment, CD, we're going to go out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. First time in 2019, Dip Cup Dave. What do you have for us, Dip Cup Dave?
What's going on, Ben? I just wanted to call and let you know how similar this Lakers trade offer was to when the Nuggets cleaned out the Knicks for Melo. And it didn't really work out for either team. I think that the Pelicans are seeking draft picks over assets and, players as assets. And, I think they're just going to hold firm and see what happens.
I completely agree with you.
Hopefully they can get their front office fixed before they deal Anthony Davis.
That might be the best call ever from Dip Cup Dave. Few others are more entertaining, but that was absolutely spot on from a rationale standpoint. We're coming up on our first break of the program. We're going to switch it over to LSU baseball when we return, and we're going to ask you for the biggest determining factor that will enable Paul Menieri and LSU to win the College World Series this year. So from Pelicans basketball to LSU baseball, we're hitting all the bases. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Four o'clock, right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Got Cody Warsham coming aboard. Right about 14, 15 minutes from right now to talk LSU hoops. Shea Dixon at 5 o'clock, National Signing Day tomorrow. Get your questions in for Shea. Facebook, Twitter, at 103.7 The Game, or call him in 706-0111. That same number is going to apply for the question I ask on the other side of this music. Exciting and new. 9 days and some change. That's right. That's all you have to wait now for LSU, and that matter, UL baseball. So before the Tigers play ball from Alec Box Stadium, let's get to the biggest determining factor that's going to make the difference in LSU winning the College World Series. Again, whenever you're ready, 706-0111. I'm not saying an X factor. This doesn't have to be something coming out of left field, quite literally. But what's the biggest determining factor in Paul Menieri and company getting there and winning it all for the first time in 10 years? CD, you're up.
It's got to be the pitching staff, more specifically Zach Hess. Can he be a dominant Friday night starter? The guy had a 5-point-something ERA last year as a starter. It kind of Paul Menieri was waffling back and forth on it. He talked to you about it. He talked in his opening press conference about how Zach has improved over the summer. He needs to prove it to me, especially in that opening weekend when they take on UL Monroe this time next Friday. I think that's a big deterrent for me to say they're going to want to make it to the College World Series is Zach Hess. Can he be, one, consistent, and two, be dominant like he was when he was a freshman, more so as a closer, but translate that into a starting role?
You need two dominant starting pitchers to get into the meat of tournaments, the SEC tournament, when you're talking about regional, super regionals, especially in Omaha. If you lose one of those first two games, yeah, then you got to have an extraordinary depth of pitching. But what we have learned is if you get there, which LSU does with decent regularity to TD Ameritrade, if you get there and you win the first two, wow, doesn't life get a lot easier? And so I'm right there with you, CD. I think that Zach Hess, to me, he's proven he deserves to be a weekend starter. Maneri says he's got the stuff to be one of the best pitchers in the SEC. So if he's that guy on Friday, it's awfully important. But I'm going to say the biggest determining factor is LSU finding a lights-out number two. Right now, if I'm reading between the lines, Maneri wants to go Hess on Fridays, Eric Walker back from injury on Sundays. It's Saturday that he's leaving in the air right now. I think he wants that guy to be Landon Marceau. And so I'm not going to out and out say that my answer to the question is Landon Marceau, but if the freshman from Destrehan is ready to roll, if LSU comes in with a 1-2 punch that you just can't beat to begin every weekend, and especially in tournament play, if Hess Marceau, Hess Walker are healthy and dealing at the right time of year, this LSU team can do just about anything. There's one other thought that crossed my mind when Clint and I conceived this question. I think that Daniel Cabrera has to play like the biggest badass this team has at the plate. I think he has to be your All-American. All due respect to Zach Watson. All due respect to Antoine Duplantis. To a lot of your regular, everyday position players, the guy with the biggest boomstick on the team right now, the guy who might be a first-round pick if he was eligible to go after this year, which thankfully he's not, is Daniel Cabrera. He had a very good freshman season coming out of Parkview Baptist. It was elite toward the end of that thing. If he starts it like he ended 2018, he becomes a difference maker throughout the SEC. He becomes your big bat that rings out and has to be dealt with. So I do think the answer for me is that second starting pitcher, that second stud behind, presumably, Zach Hess. But I'm going to throw in a little bit of a bonus ball for you there. Because something tells me that Daniel Cabrera is about to go on a trajectory to where he might be the second highest LSU position player ever drafted behind only Alex Bregman. He's got that type of potential. Now, I understand he won't be coming out of high school when it's his turn to go. He's not a starting pitcher. But we have seen from Dansby Swanson to Alex Bregman, a couple of others in recent past, if you are that much of a stud as an everyday position player, if you can rip it, they'll find you in the MLB draft. All right, enough of me and Clint. We got some time for you. What do you think here? We can get in on this conversation now. We don't have to wait until next week. After all, I've got Hunt Palmer coming aboard Thursday at 4:30. James Moran, Friday at 5 o'clock. We're officially starting our weekly LSU baseball conversation right now and this week. So get in the game. 706-0111. We're getting a text into the program here. Buddy is texting the program. Health of the pitching staff and having a dominant closer is very important. We've talked already a little bit about the health of the staff, and they've got a very, very deep rotation this year. Maybe as many as four or five guys that can lay claim to honestly being a starter. But I'm glad that Buddy mentioned closer. And when I first had Maneri on about 2 weeks ago, when they just started to gather again and the coaches weren't able to watch everything, he said, look, I'll be honest with you, we have so many options, we're going to be able to test it out in the non-conference. And that's a luxury when it comes to closer. But there have been some questions about some of the youngsters from last year. Is there an opportunity to move them to a role where they become your closer? Maybe guys that last year you even saw in a starting role. So a lot of different opportunities. And I'd be interested to see if somebody like a Hilliard maybe slides into that role, because I think that continues to be maybe a point of speculation. So, again, LSU baseball coming up, not far away, and I'm just wondering what else could put them over the top. And if you've listened to the show long enough, you probably have guessed that this question will come up from a UL standpoint sooner than later. That one is going to be, for me, all about offensive production at the plate. Because this has become a different team ever since Matt Deggs left and went to Sam Houston. They're built differently. Now with Gunnar Leger back at the top for Tony Robichaud and the pitching staff, they're going to be dynamite. The kid that sat out last year from TCU gets to come in now, whether he closes or becomes a weekend guy. I've got some confidence in the Cajuns pitching staff. Defensively, they showed last year that they could be elite, at least at the Sun Belt level. But can you game in, game out, give the type of offensive production that's going to make this a season to remember for Robe and company, as I believe he's embarking on year 25, CD, is that right? A quarter century of Robe? That's absolutely amazing. So we're getting closer to baseball, putting our feelers out there. So far, not getting any nibbles. That's okay. We're persistent. We'll keep putting lines out. LSU baseball conversation. I told you it's coming at the end of this week, and this is as good a time as any, CD, to announce this, but how about our newest addition? He'll begin next Monday after Ruffin Rodri, who we have at 5:15. Former UL All-American Jace Conrad is going to come sit in for a segment every Monday at 5:30 during the Cajuns baseball season. I'm jacked up about that.
And you should, Ben. I think that's probably one of the best gets we've gotten for college baseball season. And, of course, it's not no shade towards Hunt Palmer and James Brand, but a guy who played it back in the day, not too long ago, that's a pretty huge get.
Not just played. Winning state championships at Lafayette High, All-American for the Raging Cajuns, and doing some pretty cool things professionally these days. So I'm excited that he's going to take a little time out for us beginning next Monday. So you could pencil that in. Actually, go ahead and put it in pen. 5:30, Jace Conrad, going to be with us on B2BS Mondays in the 5 o'clock hour. So we've built up the rotation, the bullpen, and we're starting to morph in to baseball mode. But we haven't forgot about basketball, not even a little bit. That's why when we return, on the other side of this break, Cody Worsham going to break down the Tigers' loss against Arkansas, what they're going to have to do to get back on top against Mississippi State, and could there be an upset of a top five SEC team at home tonight? Tennessee, Kentucky, both at home. Could one of them fall before taking on LSU over the next couple of weeks? Those questions and more for Cody Worsham. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We've talked basketball. We've gone baseball. Oh, yeah, football's coming. It's just part of how we do it on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Iron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Time to move over to the hardwood. Time to talk some LSU basketball. Welcome back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're listening to 103.7 The Game. It's Tuesday. It's 4:30. That means it's time for our man aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. It's the one and only Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Sports. How are you, Cody?
Doing great, Ben. How are you?
We're doing well. I think people knew that an LSU loss in SEC play was inevitable, but the way this one unfolded, I love the way that Will Wade put it. His team had been walking a tightrope, and finally they fell off of it. Any chance this serves as maybe a rallying point and maybe they start a little quicker moving forward?
Yeah, I hope so, Ben. You know, what I've noticed with this team is they're a – it's as much as any LSU team that I can remember, they play in spurts. And so the earlier in the season, they were playing great in spurts, and then they just play okay in between. And so they were piecing together these great spurts around average play and getting results with that. Lately, it's kind of been the opposite, and Arkansas had really caught up to them. They played well. If you go back and look at the tape, for about 30 minutes of that game, they played pretty well, but there were two runs that Arkansas made. I think it was a 13-0 run in the first half and a 14-2 run in the second half. And do the math there, that's a 25-point difference over about a five-minute span. You take that away, and LSU kind of dominated the rest of the game. And I know they did some different things, and they got down to get back in it with the press and that sort of thing that threw threw Arkansas off. But regardless, this team, I think, is at a point where they've got to learn how to play for 40 minutes. That sounds like a basketball cliche, and I guess it kind of is, but this is a team that when they get going and they're playing their best and they're really engaged and locked in, they could be dominant, but then they have these lulls where they're turning it over and falling asleep defensively in a couple of little rotations. And you're at the point of time in your schedule now where any lapse like that, that the talent is so good, the other team's going to take advantage of it. So I think that's the biggest, the next step LSU has to take. We know they're a good team. They're possibly a very good team, but to get to that next level, it's going to have to be more focus, more attention to detail for longer stretches of time where they're sustaining it and they're not just playing in spurts.
Talking LSU Hoops with Cody Worsham. Highly encourage you read his work, continue to read his work, lsusports.net, and you can listen to the Boot Up podcast anywhere that podcasts are found. I think there have been two areas, Cody, if we were to look at this team critically. In the non-conference play, it was probably rebounding early in conference play. Maybe it was outside three-point shooting. How do you reflect on where they're at on both fronts? Because even in the loss to Arkansas, didn't they have like 19 offensive rebounds, something astounding like that?
Yeah, the rebounding has been a lot better. I think they finished with 19. They out-rebounded Arkansas 44-20, I believe, off the top of my head, which is a ridiculous number. And the way that Will Wade has always approached rebounding, I mean, he said this the 3 or 4 weeks after he got to LSU last year. He's not a real, when he's coaching in practice, he doesn't harp on defensive rebounding too much, but he really, really focuses on offensive rebounding, and he kind of feels that if you work on that in practice, your defensive rebounding will improve just by association because your guys are battling on the boards. That's kind of been the way that LSU's rebounded this year. They started off slow on the offensive glass, but they've gotten better and better to where now they're just dominant on that end of the floor. And because they're so dominant, it's kind of helping their defensive rebounding. But their three-point shooting has been interesting because they had a stretch where they were number one in the SEC in three-point shooting through, I don't know, 5 or 6 games. And then they've just gone cold over the last 3 or 4. So I think that the three-point shooting, I think it goes both ways, both three-point shooting on offense and defense. It's kind of cyclical. Like, some games you're hot, some games you're cold. It kind of levels out to an even playing field. I don't think LSU is a great shooting team, but I think they have good shooters who can shoot better than they have been. I think Skylar Mays will find his stroke from three. I think Javonte Smart will start shooting better from three. I think Darius Days will start making more threes. I think those will progress to the mean, if that makes any sense, and maybe some of the other numbers regress to the mean. But the rebounding is much improved, and to me that's highly encouraging. And if LSU can just clean up the turnovers on offense, I think they're going to be in really good shape.
And we know coming up tomorrow night, LSU, Mississippi State, it's a big road contest against a ranked team. And I've seen an awful lot over the years, especially at the high school level, Cody, of Lamar Peters. He is fantastic. I want you to tell us a little bit about how he's progressed as a collegiate player. And then also, Quindary Weatherspoon continues to lead State in scoring, the challenges that he presents.
Yeah, Lamar is a guy that's always been explosive, can get hot in a hurry, plays with a lot of passion and intensity. But he's been inefficient early in his career at Mississippi State, turnovers and not shooting a super high percentage from the field, taking some bad shots. He's cleaned that up this year. I mean, his turnovers are down, his percentages are up. He's playing a much more steady game. And he's still got that passion, that intensity, that ability to heat up in a hurry. So he's kind of taken away the negative aspects of his game and really accentuated the positives. He's a good player. He and Tremont Waters matched up well last year. LSU played Mississippi State 2 times and in a couple-week span when you look at the end of conference. And, well, 2 times in 1 week with back-to-back games, in fact, with the conference tournament and the last game of the regular season. So they're very familiar with each other. And then Quindary, I mean, he's just a vet. He's got all the talent in the world, but he plays at his own tempo. I mean, that's one thing that I always like to judge basketball players with is, do they set the tempo or do they respond to the tempo? And Quindary Weatherspoon, you can't speed him up. He's going to play the game at the pace he wants to play at. He can shoot it from outside. He can create driving angles. He's got great feet around the rim, and he's clutch. He's got ice in his veins. So you put all that together, and, State is really, really talented. I know they got off to a slow start in SEC play. I think they lost their first two, I believe, but they've won 4 of 6 since. So they're a good team, very talented, and they've got 2 home games this week, first with LSU and then Kentucky. So they're going to come out focused this week and LSU's got their hands full. It's going to be a good matchup.
Another moment or two with Cody Worsham. In a moment, I'm going to pick his brain on a couple of games tonight. Ranked teams at home in the SEC. Any chance of an update? But once more, if you don't mind, Cody, on LSU at State tomorrow night, you've mentioned a couple of backcourt players for the Bulldogs and how good they are. Is there an opportunity, especially for Reed in this ballgame, to take over? Does LSU have the advantage up front?
Yeah, you know, State's pretty good up front, too, with Eric Holman. And then their freshman, who just won Freshman of the Week. Inside, his name eludes me, but he's their other big man. Those two guys are a good front, but I don't think either quite has the versatility of both size and strength and skill that Naz has. So he could use his physicality to his advantage. I thought he did that against Arkansas. I thought it was his most decisive game as an attacker from the post. He made his decisions. He got to his spots. He only had the one offensive foul, I think, so he was good about being aggressive but not being overly aggressive. He's going to have to continue to play that way because when he plays that way, it really picks up LSU's level. And then you get Tremont Waters. I think, you know, he had a down game shooting against Arkansas. If he gets back to his level, if some of the other guys get back to their percentages, I think LSU will be fine offensively. But State brings a threat, too, with their guys inside. Holman is such a versatile player. He can block shots. He can shoot threes. It's going to be a very interesting matchup of front courts.
All right, I told you, we were going elsewhere in the SEC, and tonight, South Carolina at number 5, Kentucky, Missouri at number 1, Tennessee, they are both prohibitive favorites. Either chance that there's an upset there, and, I mean, if there's an inkling of that chance, which one has a better chance of pulling it?
Yeah, probably South Carolina against Kentucky, just because they got off to such a good start in SEC play, and they do some things that they can match up well with Kentucky. Tennessee's a juggernaut to me. Missouri is undermanned without Jontay Porter. I've been impressed with the way they're playing, and Jordan Geis is maybe the toughest guard, just hard-nosed, toughest guard in the SEC. He's an elite pivoter, which is, I've said that before in a couple interviews, and I kind of chuckle when I say it, but he really is. It's a good skill to have, and he showed it against LSU. So maybe Missouri can battle there, but I think those two teams right now are the clear, in Tennessee and Kentucky, the two clear front runners in the SEC. LSU's right there in the mix, but Kentucky's finding its stride. They're hitting their stride. Their only loss is at Bama. They've been on a roll since then, and then Tennessee is just on a different level with the way they take care of the ball on offense, and Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield, and Jordan Bone is such a steady point guard, and then they guard the way that they can guard. Those two teams are clearly the best of the SEC right now, with, I think, LSU being in that category. So I would expect both of those favorites to win. But if I had to pick one, maybe South Carolina can give Kentucky a run.
Always love our Tuesday chats with Cody Worsham, LSU Sports digital media reporter. And again, the podcast, it's called The Boot Up Podcast. The latest edition goes in on Javonte Smart, his fearlessness, a tough stretch ahead, State, Auburn, then Kentucky. And then, Cody, I love that you paid some homage, if you will, to the Saturday atmosphere at the PMAC. You and I have been around that place enough to know that when it gets rocking, it makes such a difference, and how great it is to have that back in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, Ben, it was awesome on Saturday. I mean, I said this on the podcast. When I left the game to go to the press conference, like, my face felt hot. Like, I just felt like there was heat in the building. There was definitely energy and loudness in the building. I kind of had to stop outside and take a couple deep breaths just because it was such an intense atmosphere, which is not always the case with the PMAC. It hasn't always been the case. There's been times where it's been like that, but for that game, Arkansas not being a big, you know, ranked team or anything like that, that was good to see, and hopefully it's kind of predictive of some crowds in the future for LSU this year.
Love the enthusiasm. Cody, thanks for kicking it with us. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, Ben. Thanks, man.
PMAC. So on fire, it got his cheeks warm. That is a nice sign. Just got to keep the winning going. The people will continue to come into the house that Pete built. And maybe, just maybe, this thing could really be a powder keg moving toward the postseason. All right, you've got 15, maybe 20 minutes, somewhere in that vicinity left, to get your questions in for Shay Dixon of Go247. He'll answer them at straight up 5 o'clock as we're getting awfully close to National Signing Day tomorrow, the regular signing period in the 2019 class. We're coming right back in. We'll take your questions as well. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, taking you home, having some fun on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go, right back in with more of the good stuff. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Creeping up on the 5 o'clock hour. We've got time for you to talk. 706-0111. Just depends on what tickles your fancy. Let off with some of the continued news of the last week and a half. And it's going to continue to be ongoing, I believe, past Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern time, the NBA trade deadline. Anthony Davis, is he going to the Lakers? I think that's the only, at least publicly acknowledged, trade partner that the Pels have been in trade talks with over the last couple of days. Lakers wanted to back up the truck, give all their young players, and a couple of aging ones too, familiar face in Rajon Rondo, Lance Stephenson, maybe a first-round draft pick, and the Pels said no. Well, seems as if the Lakers have come back with another offer, and again, the Pels are saying no, and I think smartly, forces within the Pelicans organization are not going to let anything happen before Thursday. And I think it's pretty clear whether it happens during the remainder of the regular season or once the regular season's over, Dell Demps will be gone. Somebody else will be making this decision. I don't know if the same could be said about Alvin Gentry. I think his future might be a little more uncertain. I do feel certain about what's going to happen to Dell Demps. I don't think you have to sweat that one bit. But the Pelicans, refusing to make an out-and-out offer, a counter to the Lakers, but they're letting it be known that they want four first-slash-second-round draft picks. And, CD, the more that I read into it, the more that I look at what's being put out there by a number of NBA beat writers, it almost looks like the Pels are saying, we want four first-round picks. To hell with that first-slash-second thing. I think they want everything you got as far as premium draft picks between now and the year 2022.
Exactly. You want to be able to rack up as many first-round picks as possible, get some really quality picks down the line. I think you're looking towards the future and wanting to get some really decent names to help build around because, again, I talked about this with Jordy, was Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball are two of the names that are being bantied about. Do you really want those two guys that have definitely regressed in their second year in the NBA?
Well, look, winning is important. Star power, I'll continue to tell you, is more important. Because in the NBA, that's what we go to see. I don't want to beat this dead horse into the ground, but again, there's a reason it costs more to go watch the Pels play the Lakers in New Orleans than it does to cost than it does cost you to play see the Pels play the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks is a better team. They're the best team in basketball. But it's going to cost more to go see the star and LeBron. It works the same way with stars when they play in your hometown. Ticket prices, jersey sales, all kinds of different merchandising, licensing opportunities. So they're going to have to be able to attract a Jason Tatum. They're going to have to be able to attract a star-level player and potentially draft a Zion Williamson type. I think that's the direction this thing is going. So mercifully, somebody, maybe some bodies within that Pels organization are going to let this thing stay on ice until the offseason. So we let off the show with that, but it continues to be a hot topic. Not to steal from you and Jordy too much there, amigo. We went into LSU baseball, and I'm going to be honest. I'm a little disappointed with YP, you people out there in listener land, and frankly, on the Twitter sphere, on Facebook. I thought that everybody was ready to move away from football season. The vibe I was getting is, let's talk some hoops. Let's talk some baseball. LSU's got the number one team in the country. And nobody wants to discuss what's going to enable them to cross a finish line that they haven't since 2009. I'm a little surprised by that, but we do have at least one nibble, so we'll share that from the Facebook side of things, CD. And yeah, we've gotten one saying, scoring more runs than their opponents. All right, well, thank you for that. But Brian Joubert, keeping the starting rotation healthy and developing that solid fourth midweek starter. I do think that's more important for the Cajuns because of the significance in RPI terms of their midweek games. For LSU, a fourth starter becomes most important for postseason depth and in the case of injury. or in the case of falling off the map. And Lord knows we've seen that. Just because you have a guy that starts the season top three in the weekend rotation doesn't mean he ends there. So I think Brian's on to something very important with the healthy rotation. But as far as the fourth starter, I'd rather see that guy be a bridge pitcher, right? I'd rather see that guy throw the fifth to the eighth inning on a consistent basis in SEC play. And then if he's needed in the postseason to start, then you got him. And they've had some of those guys in years past. Caleb Gilbert, maybe even Todd Peterson. And look, there's some of those guys I just mentioned are going to be options for that role again this year. So four starter maybe, but dynamite, just bridge the gap guy between a starter and your closer. I think that's an awfully important role.
I have to agree with you. It definitely is an important role. But I think what we're talking with Brian's comment here, talking about that fourth midweek starter having a solid one, I think he, along with probably a lot of other LSU baseball fans, are getting sick and tired of seeing the Jack / Johnny Holstaff approach and want to see that solid fourth midweek starter.
Well,
I'm going to finish my statement real quick. It's not only for the fact that you're going to wind up having a guy that's going to be consistent and be able to help you out in the postseason, but also in case you wind up having somebody get injured during the season, you can plug him in
right,
and he's ready to go. He doesn't have to be as nervous about playing under the bright lights of the box.
And that's what I mentioned by sliding him to a spot if somebody gets injured. But when it comes to having that fourth midweek starter, because fans might be upset with losing these midweek games, Maneri doesn't give a damn.
Yeah, as he shouldn't.
When you talk about developing a fourth starter, define terms. Later in the season, to have him ready for the SEC tournament beyond, okay, maybe. But Maneri isn't worried, and I think history shows he shouldn't be worried about losing in the midweek to Tulane, UL, UNO, McNeese. Who cares?
I mean, look at 2 years ago. That's a prime example.
And they were one game away from winning it all.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I struggle a little bit with the four-starter part for LSU. I just don't think it's as important. I'd rather see that guy pitch in high-leverage situations in SEC play. If you have somebody who can't get out of the third inning, I'd rather see him come in and pitch from the bottom of the third, or I guess it would be the top of the third if you're Alec Box, through the sixth or seventh inning. I think that's more high leverage, high stakes, bright lights than going eight innings against UNO and Alec Box in April.
Who's to say it's eight innings? I mean, you could probably wind up having him go at least half the game, at least until the fifth inning.
Then what about the bright lights part there?
I mean, I think you definitely are going to want to be in play under the bright lights of Alec Box Stadium or even above the Shriner Airline.
That's where I get a little sideways with it. What's more important? Where are the lights brighter? Rescuing a game against, I don't know, Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee in May? Or pitching against UNO in the box on a Tuesday night? I don't know. We may disagree on that. I'm sure we'll come back to it a time or two this season. All right, we're almost halfway home. Let's fit in one final word in this hour.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Unimportant. Anthony Davis saying that his preferred destinations are the Lakers, the Knicks, the Clippers and the Bucks. That is unequivocally unimportant. It's not going to affect what the Pels should do or will do. Everyone wants to say that Rich Paul and company did the organization a solid. They don't owe Anthony anything when it comes to that. Get the best deal for you. The rest is unimportant. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back. Shay Dixon coming with us. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
So who do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of two underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. 1 hour to go of Bumper to Bumper Sports as we take you home on this Tuesday, February the 5th on 103.7 The Game. We got a great guest. Every Tuesday, he's with us. Today, we're not going to split him in half. That would hurt physically, but we're not going to do that in terms of segments either. There's no flip the script today because there are less than about 18 hours to go until the faxes start to come in, until National Signing Day, the regular period of 2019. And with that, it's time to bring aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. Shea Dixon, go247.com. All right, Shea, are you even sleeping these days, or are you just zombie land 24/7?
Well, you woke me up when you said you were seated alongside the infamous, and I thought you were going to say Shady, but you went with Clint D, so I'm living.
I kind of like infamous Clint D. We might work that in. All right, I have questions that are coming from social media. We'll get to those momentarily, but I'll ask you the one that's on everybody's mind. Is Ishmael Sopcich at this point truly undecided, or do you think he's made up his mind one way or the other?
Well, I could believe, you know, I don't know it to be fact, but I'm probably leaning that his mind's probably been made up one way or the other going into the final 48 hours, and now it's just a matter of either finalizing that decision or just informing the coaching staff. So, you know, so often people say, and I've talked to current players on the team who said, I did take it, you know, all the way down to the end. Jamar Chase even said, look, I was thinking about it all the way till the last second. So we've seen this before where a kid, they'll sit down at a dinner table tonight and talk it over with the family and weigh out the pros and cons. And I certainly think that is what Sopcich is going to do. And I think he's got, I don't know how many hats he's going to have on the table. I know that he's got a final seven, but it's LSU, it's Alabama. It's the battle that we thought it would be. And certainly I don't think that anybody's shocked that we're going into the final 24-hour stretch, really, with not a whole lot leaking out, you know, neither side feeling like it was an absolute done deal. And I don't think that they'll feel that way until the faxes come in, or at least until Sopcich puts on a hat tomorrow. But I'll say this, look, and I'll be sort of as honest as I can be. I've thought for a long time that Alabama led. I thought that one thing that stood out to me was that LSU had everyone and their mom come in for the Georgia game, which was obviously the marquee get home game of the year. They knocked off one of the top teams in the country at the time. And everybody was there. John Emery said it really helped swing his decision. He was actually committed to the Bulldogs. Sopcich was the only guy who didn't come that day, and he went to Alabama and watched him play Missouri. So I think for a long time, if you kind of read his actions, they pointed to Alabama. But now we're here in the final stretch. He gave LSU his final visit. LSU has not only the in-state angle working, but also has recruited his brother, which Alabama's not done, and offered Rodney Sopcich a spot in next year's 2020 class. And now a lot of people are kind of trying to figure out what Rodney's going to do, because I put out an article on Go247 today where I interviewed Rodney, where he said he's going to announce a future decision on Wednesday, and his only college offers right now are LSU and Oregon. So read into that how you may. So there's a lot floating around. You try to make sense of what's fact and what's fiction, which is tough, you know, at this stage when people are trying to keep it, you know, play it close to the vest. But I'll say this, if LSU is able to pull Ishmael Sopcich and sign him on Wednesday, it will be the best recruiting job, in my opinion, that Orgeron's done yet. And do I think that Derek Stingley's a better player? Yes. Do I think that John Emery's a better player right now? Yes. So I don't mean it in that sense, but I mean it by he's going to go head-to-toe with Alabama for a guy that they led for very long in a meet, which is an area where in Kanesha Hoyer they landed Devonta Smith out of a meet and certainly Shaheem Carter out of Kentwood. And we've seen him sort of fight back, right? They got Trey Palmer out of Kentwood this year, who played for the Kangaroos, signed him in December. I think they'll get Devonta Lee on Wednesday, which is Amit High's other top prospect, and he'll sign with the Tigers. But can they go 3-for-3? And if they do get Ishmael Sopcich, for all the reasons I mentioned, that being a D lineman and being the guy that everybody's watching, I think it would be his biggest recruiting win yet.
Shea Dixon dropping bombs and knowledge on 103.7 The Game. All right, my friend, a couple of follow-ups on the Amit contingent. Are you saying that it's at least possible that Rodney Sopcich goes from reclassifying to 2020 back into 2019?
No, I think he would probably announce a commitment, and then he's just, you know, let's just put it this way. If he's going to announce tomorrow for LSU. And if Ishmael announces for LSU, Rodney would then be on the 2020 commit list.
Okay.
He's going to go back to JUCO this spring and in the fall, and then he will be graduating from JUCO per his father next December. So he would only be a public commitment, not a signee.
And you've answered this next question a couple of different times on the trail, weekends on 103.7 The Game, but I want to make sure it still holds true. There is no package deal between Devontae Lee and Ishmael Sopcich. In other words, wouldn't surprise you one bit if tomorrow Lee is LSU and Sopcich is elsewhere, but it could be that they're both LSU.
Yes, and I don't think it's really his one title. Like, if Ishmael ends up at LSU, I don't think he's going there because Devonta went there. You know, I think that they are friends, but Devonta's probably closer, according to his mother, with guys like, you know, Monty Gilmore and Kyle Maxwell, some other kids that played on AB's team that he was probably buddies with, and they're going to Kentucky and La Tech and different places. So, no, I don't think anybody on AB's team was a package deal except Rodney Sopcich and Ishmael Sopcich. And even then, we don't know if it is truly a package deal because Ishmael said just a month ago when he had his last public interviews that a major sticking point would be who's going to offer me the chance to play with my brother again. And there's only been two schools to do that, LSU and Oregon. And if he goes to Alabama, that obviously wasn't of major importance to him, and there wasn't a package deal all along.
I think you just answered one of our Twitter questions for you. At JOHSC24, is Rodney the final chess piece for Ogeron to get Ish? Sounds like you're saying the answer is it can't hurt, but there's no guarantee. In other words, maybe. We'll let you know tomorrow.
Right. Well, yeah, and it could be, right? Like, if Ish was on the fence and he said, well, and even if he wasn't, if he said, hey, look, I kind of like Alabama a bit more, but if all things are about equal and I can play with my brother, maybe this is the best fit more for me. And then you would view it as a major piece that was played that swayed it in your direction. So I don't think it can be undersold, but it's a piece they're playing, and we'll see tomorrow if it gets swiped up off the board or if it gets him a checkmate.
Another few minutes with Shea Dixon. Get your questions in now on Twitter at 103.7 The Game, at Ben Love TMF. All right, at D Laura LL wants a status update on Charles Moore. What can you tell him?
Boy, I think he's going to leave a couple of coaching staffs with some optimism going into Monday. And I say that because he was a kid committed to Mississippi State forever, and it didn't look like he was going to budge. And he does a complete 180 a month before signing day and says, I'm done with State. And then all of a sudden he loves Florida and Florida State, and now neither of them seem to really be in the mix. And Mississippi State sort of surged back by sending a bunch of coaches to him last week, and he visited there after his LSU official visit, so he was in town from Friday to Sunday, and then he goes and visits Starkville that night. And I guess you catch the drift now that he's sort of been all over the map, and it's been tough to track. So I think the latest with him is that, in my opinion, I don't think he's going to go to Mississippi State because I think he would have just stayed committed to Mississippi State. I don't understand what would have changed there, not to mention that their defensive line coach isn't even there anymore. So I think it's LSU or Auburn, and I think both sides are probably, and I don't want to say confident, because I think that both sides realize that he's probably saying good things to multiple people. So they go in tomorrow hopeful, but I don't know if they would say that they're overly confident.
Your gut tells you, and this is back to me asking you questions here, partner, your gut tells you LSU signs how many players tomorrow?
23, maybe 24, 24 maybe.
So four or five
more. Yes, I think that they're going to sign. Look, they've got Maurice Hampton and Sony Fandua committed, and I think both of them are, they're going to sign. So that gets you to 21. You've got Ray Parker committed. It doesn't look like he's going to be back in the fold, but look, if numbers don't work out for him or if a couple guys come off the board, I mean, I'm not ruling it out that they'll go back to him. You know, it's a possibility. He's been committed to him for a long time. So, I would say then that Devonta Lee could get you to 22. You go for Ishmael Sopcich, that could get you 23. And then if you happen to land Charles Moore or a Byron Young, another defensive lineman committed to Alabama, or you take you go out and you say, okay, we will take Garmon Randolph, the tight end who visited, then that can get you a little bit higher. But I don't see him signing. If they sign a full 25 tomorrow, that means they got everybody they wanted. So I think it'll probably be in the 23 to 24 range, which, I think most people usually expect all along, is that you may not get all the way there, but you'll come close.
So if that is the case, we're coming down the stretch now with Shea Dixon, go247.com. Let's say they've got one, maybe two spots remaining after tomorrow. Give me the biggest position or positions of need they may try to fill those with. And again, we know the options at that point. It's grad transfer, it's JUCO, but how about positionally?
Well, I think it's defensive line unless they hit on Ishmael Sopcich and a Charles Moore tomorrow, you know, or and a Byron Young. Or, so, you know, if they get a Hail Mary and get all three, which I don't think is happening. But I think as long as you're not stacking up tomorrow on D-linemen, they'll want to address it again if they have any open spots. And with the kind of priority that – look, they recruited really well. They got the DBs they needed. They got a quarterback. They got two elite running backs. They didn't need many receivers. They'll sign two probably with Trey Palmer and Devonta Lee. They got the linebackers they needed at middle linebacker. They pick up the Marcel Brooks and Sonny Fandua, the edge rusher types. So I just stick in the trenches, which is what Ed Orgeron prioritizes. You can never have enough of them. So I will say D-line or offensive tackle would probably be something they'd like to address if someone pops up and, it looks the part and they have a spot or two available.
Okay, using the 247 composite, give our listeners an idea of where this signing class is likely to finish nationwide. And we'll go with and then maybe without Ishmael Sopcich.
Well, I'll tell you this. With Ishmael Sopcich right now, they would jump from 6 to 4. So you can think of it like that. With kind of how the top 10 is ordered now, getting an Ishmael Sopcich gives you about a two-spot jump. But as you get up into the 1 and 2 range, which is where Alabama, Georgia are currently ranked, you got to hit on everybody. So I think that the max would be 3. They're ranked 6 now. Obviously, other teams are going to get signees as well that aren't on the commit list now. So messing around with the class calculator, Ben, I think it could be anywhere from 3 or 4, to kind of a middle point. If you hit on kind of half the guys, it'd be 5 or 6. And if you come up snake eyes, I don't really see them drifting much further back than 7, or 8, maybe even be the 4. So it would be, I think, what Ed Orgeron's first class, which he was there halfway for, was ranked 7, and then last year was 15. So they're already well into the top 10. I don't see them moving out of that. And really, I think they'll probably just be moving up from here. So between probably 3 and 6, I think, is where they'll finish.
It's going to be a fun finish. And, of course, all the fans can follow you, Sonny Shipp, who joined us yesterday. Billy Embody's been a regular with us as well. Go247.com. I know you guys have had a phenomenal special going on, but the deals, they're always good to get this type of information.
And we'll run the 5 for 1. I think we extended it a day. So if anyone still wants to spend $10 on something today, you can go to the site and sign up, and that'll get you VIP access all the way to fall camp. So you'll kind of get everything. Tomorrow you'll get all of spring ball and the summer camps and sort of everything that comes with recruiting a team all the way until next fall, Ben. But what you won't get is a lot out of me on Thursday, because I probably will just be chilling.
Our listeners, I promise you, leave more on bars for tips than that $10. I know that because I see it at the Taproom River Ranch every Thursday. So we'll get them to spend it your way. It'll be a great 6 months investment, and I look forward to catching up with you on the trail this weekend. Shea, as always, killer stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it. And a happy NSC to everyone out there. And if you're an LSU fan, I hope it goes well for you, because that means my job's a little easier.
Yes, his job is easier. His message board is a happier place. And then life goes on. Hey, before we go on into our next segment, again, salute. Thanks to the famous. Well, see, there we go. I just almost replaced you. I was about to say the famous Shea D. Things are getting a little too confusing for me. The famous Shea D. Not here inside the 237 Roof Studios. The infamous Clint D most certainly is. But the info I wanted to give you is this. There's been a time change in the announcement tomorrow for Ishmael Sopcich and Devonta Lee. It's now going to be 12:45 p.m. Central Time on the Deuce. You can actually watch that one tomorrow. And a lot of people going to be monitoring that. So 12:45 p.m., the ceremony is supposed to start from Amede High School. We've had Zephaniah Powell, their head coach, on this show recently. They're going to have a 3-ring circus over in Tangipahoa Parish tomorrow. That one ought to be entertaining. And kind of wrapping up on a recruiting note here, because we do need to hit a break. A number of recruiting services are starting to rank a local product who his time isn't anywhere near come yet. But 2022 quarterback Walker Howard out of St. Thomas More. Hard to imagine he's even the starter next year, right? With Caleb Holstein coming back and finishing his senior season for the Cougars, but Walker Howard, for many, a top 10 quarterback in the 2022 class. Again, QB hit list, the latest to designate him there. So recruiting never sleeps. Shea Dixon today is talking about Charles Moore, Ishmael Sopcich, over the next 3+ years, it'll be the likes of Walker Howard. All right, we'll be right back in. We'll take more of your questions, and we'll keep the show rolling. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
At 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. That guy's really good at his job. Shea Dixon, Go247, just broke it down. And normally he and I would flip the script, but I wanted to leave a little bit of meat on the bone. A little time for you to call in, ask your recruiting questions, or just react to what you heard there. 706-0111. I've got one reaction that I'll share momentarily. But don't forget, we will have On the Trail this weekend. We're going to clean up all the pieces from what transpires tomorrow. Right now, I know, it's future talk. By Saturday morning, it'll be in the rear view. So Shea and I will be able to break it all down. Plus, we're expecting a visit on that program from Billy Napier, head coach of the Raging Cajuns, On the Trail. Weekday mornings, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Saturday. We re-air it Sundays, 8 to 9 a.m. So if you enjoyed Shea right there, we'll have him back again this weekend. The biggest takeaway for me, I'm going to paraphrase the way that Sonny Shipp put it yesterday on the program. We had him on at 4 o'clock, and as he led off, he said, and again, this is about the gist of it, LSU has done just about everything humanly possible in their control to get Ishmael Sofshier, but it's probably not going to be enough. That's what it sounded like to me from Sonny, and I didn't hear anything that really differed from that, from what Shea just laid down. To have him on campus for the better part of 4 days, to think about applying some of the in-state pressure, if you want to call it that, to pair him with all the different defensive linemen LSU's got coming back, Braden Fajoco, Rashard Lawrence, the ones that are coming in, Sioki Aika. It just seems like they've pulled every rabbit out of the hat. And so why is there this magnetism to Alabama? I think we could all probably take a couple of guesses. Is it something under the rug, under the table? Hey, you know, I'm not going to speculate on that on the program. You hear things, but you always do. It's college football. Everyone's cheating. It's just a question of who gets caught and how much. Let's be honest. But more than that, is Alabama still able to pull the card that we're the best on the block? Even after what happened with Clemson over in Santa Clara a month ago, can Alabama still say, here's what we're doing for our kids, and certainly Quinnen Williams will be the next in line. Our kids are getting to the professional level more often than not in 3 years. They're still carrying over a decent number of Louisiana kids. Again, it used to be that the real battleground was Monroe, and now it seems to be Tangipahoa Parish, right? And you could look at some of the success that those kids have had there. I wouldn't say that it's one-sided. You know, it didn't exactly work out the way that Hootie Jones wanted it, just for example. And yeah, we saw Cameron Robinson got to the NFL. He's still playing with Booga Nation over in Jacksonville. But, I mean, he wasn't a slam dunk, lottery first-round type pick that he was projected to be coming out of West Monroe as a high school player. We'll find out. Devontae Smith that's there now, cat's all kind of famous. Caught a touchdown in OT to win the national championship 2 years ago, but we'll see what happens with his professional future. And then there are others. But my biggest takeaway is that the Alabama mystique when it comes to recruiting is not going away. And I think that right now, Ed Orgeron and LSU are still winning a number of the most important battles. I'm not short-sighted. I'm not blind to the fact that LSU worked its tail off to keep Derek Stingley, Cardell Thomas in the city, to keep Destrahan's John Emery in the I-10 corridor. I'm not blind to any of that. And for good measure, they're going into the state of Alabama and getting Peter Parrish. And I'm not betting against Talia Tungavialoa. I don't like to do that when it comes to high school kids. I don't like to bet against them. It doesn't seem right to me, no matter where they're going to high school. But I'm closer to being ready to bet on Peter Parrish. if you catch my drift. And so Alabama had two different options of in-state quarterbacks, and they're going with the legacy, and they should. They absolutely should go get Tua's brother. They did. That's the right play for the Crimson Tide. But LSU is going into the Yellowhammer State and nitpicking Peter Parrish. And whether the Tide put the full court press on or not, who cares? The Cat won a state championship this year at, I think, the 6A level, or whatever the highest classification of football is in Alabama. By the way, he beat Talia Tagovailoa's team in that championship game. So I see what Ed Orgeron is doing, and I can appreciate it. But if you think that Alabama, just because they lost the national championship this year, if you think they lost that game this year and all of a sudden they're going to fall off in terms of recruiting, I got another thing coming for you, Jack. It's not going to happen. And so it's going to be Bama, Georgia, A&M, and you're going to hear a lot about them tomorrow. But as Shea told you, there's a chance that LSU could finish right there in that 3-4-5 range. That is good enough. I'm not saying that LSU should accept being second best or third best in the country, but that is good enough because of the types of positions they're hitting at to compete with Alabama and get closer to doing so. So, like, I get it. It wasn't fun when it was Monroe. It's not fun now that it's Tangipahoa Parish, now that it's Ameade High School. It's not fun for you. And now he's trying to go to Walker High School. He wants Livingston Parish, too, because they got a lot of talent right now for Walker. But LSU has a chance to finish very strong this year, and that's something that could have them in contention with Bama and keeping up with the Joneses, in particular, the guy that's recruiting right now in College Station moving forward. That is good enough. That might just get it done. When we return, time to throw a little shade, and LeVar Ball is going to be honored, if you want to call it that, for about the 15th time in that segment. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and if he earns it, I got to keep giving it to him on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
If you thought you were rid of LeVar Ball in your life, you got another thing coming. You'll hear more about that in a minute. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. And what is especially ironic and juicy about this Lakers dalliance with Anthony Davis. The Pels, they're not ready to get rid of him, and I don't think they should be. The Lakers likely know that their only real chance to score the brow right now and before dipping into some of the 2019-2020 waters, if they want to stack their deck right now, they got to get him before Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time in the NBA trade deadline. The funny and ironic part that I'm segueing into is that LeVar Ball continues to make a horse's you-know-what out of himself and reminding any potential trade partner that if you're going to get Lonzo Ball, you're getting LeVar as well. And boy, that's the type of headache, distraction, and egomaniac that I don't think anybody wants in their lives right now. I'll give you the full details in a moment. First, your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in the management, top down, starting with Mark, to help you create and then fulfill visions. You can also trust their professional installers inside your home. And how important is that in 2019? Collectively, they're ready to up your patio game, and they can help you do it before LSU, UL, and the Astros make postseason runs, have the baddest patio game on the block. It all starts with a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
In an interview with a local Arizona radio station, LeVar Ball did the following, and I mean in a very brief amount of time. He called the Lakers a bunch of losers. By the way, they have a winning record, and currently, if the postseason started, they would be in it. But the Lakers losers, according to LeVar Ball. Second, called Luke Walton the worst coach for Lonzo. Yes, the same Luke Walton, who's the son of a Hall of Famer, Bill Walton, who was plucked off of the Golden State Warriors tree. And remember that time, way back when Steve Kerr had health-related issues and Luke Walton started the season as the interim head coach, and I think they went like 15-0. I know, the talent there was different, but Luke Walton, according to big baller LeVar Brand, the worst coach for his eldest son, Lonzo. LeVar also said that the Suns would take all three of his boys, which includes the one that was out there stealing from the Chinese while playing for UCLA. Big ups. Finally, LeVar Ball, in scorching as much earth as he could find, said that Lonzo is the one who made Kyle Kuzma. Lonzo is the only reason that Kyle Kuzma is a formidable NBA forward. The amount of lunacy, the amount of delusion that never leaves the mind of LeVar Ball is truly astounding. And for him to make statements, as he has all week long, that Lonzo should not be in New Orleans, he belongs in Phoenix, I will speak it into existence. Hey, as I said on the program yesterday, self-talk, a lot of the most successful people in the world do it. You want to be one of them? Go ahead. But there's this line of delusion that you crossed long ago, my friend. And right now, anybody that wants to do business with Magic Johnson, with Rob Pelinka, has to be asking themselves, look, if we take Lonzo, is there any chance that you could just keep LeVar? How much in terms of cash considerations? Would you like a second-round draft pick? Any way you could keep LeVar? Because we don't want what he brings to town. It's an absolute freak show.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
And yet I still know full well that LeVar Ball is winning. Why? Because I'm having this damn conversation. I feel like I'm in a time loop. CD, right now we've got season 3 of True Detective. It's got me glued on Sunday nights, but I feel like I just flash back to McConaughey in season 1. Time is a flat circle. Thank you for the reminder, LeVar.
Exactly. Well, LeVar Ball is just ridiculous as all get out. And you're talking about the fine line between delusion. I think he's, in the words of the late, great Charlie Murphy, a habitual line stepper in that case.
I forgot until you just said that Charlie Murphy is no longer with
us.
Yeah. Habitual line stepper. It's a great Chappelle Show reference. And maybe it'll take my mind off of LeVar Ball and his idiocy for another beat or two. We're going to take our final break in the program. Time for your calls on the other side. Don't forget, when we're done at 6 o'clock, Jeff Palermo and Company, Tiger Rag Radio, 6 to 8 p.m. Plenty of great content after we're done. But once more, we'll be back. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game at 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Quarter to 6 o'clock. Let's do it one more time. Bumper to Bumper Sports back on 103.7 The Game. Wanted to get into a little more recruiting conversation here. We got time for you as well. 706-0111. And before we let you hear from A-Mead High head coach Zephaniah Powell, because I still think some of his clips, some of what he had to say on Devonta Lee, on Ishmael Sabsher, I think they still hold weight a week and a half later from when we first conducted the interview, as we're on NSD Eve. Before that, another note that came out of the local paper today, and by the way, we'll have to discuss that a little bit more, as it seems that our good friend James Buers, along with longtime Acadiana sports writer Kevin Foote, might be trading places. Another story for another day. But a local news outlet reporting that Dalen Cambry, a St. Thomas More wide receiver, is going to be a part of Billy Napier's Raging Cajuns team next year. So congrats to him. Got to watch him play a decent amount. Backup quarterback. I mean, did just about everything for that team. Was a holder. Could return punts, kicks, and certainly was a big receiving threat as that team went down the stretch. But CD, we're going to play a little bit now from Zephaniah Powell. And I know that somewhere in there, he had some, and our apologies here, we're making sure we get these in line for you, but I know that he had something to say about Ishmael Sobsher being a little bit of a homebody, right? And some of the things that he took away from his trip out to Hawaii to play in the Polynesian Bowl.
He's handled it well. He went out to Oregon a couple weeks back. You know, like you said, he's going to take his last three, you know, with Bama, Ole Miss, and then, you know, and it'll culminate, you know, with that LSU visit, you know, right there before signing day. So, you know, he's taking everything in stride, you know, and he's, you know, he's processing everything, you know, gathering all his information as well. And, you know, just like Devontae, you know, he'll sit down these next couple of days, you know, and really, really, you know, decide on what, you know, what's the best path for him.
What's interesting, we're going to let you hear next about the LSU pitch to Ishmael Sobsher. I want you to listen to this, and maybe now with a little bit of the gift of hindsight, now that you've heard in back-to-back days, Sonny Shipp, then Shea Dixon, this sounds pretty rosy. And I don't think the coach was painting pie in the sky at all. I just think this is honestly the pitch that was given. But now, even with this pitch, even with the last chance at bat for an official visit, I'm just not sure this is going to be enough competing against Bama.
Right. Well, I mean, it's real easy. You know, you want to play in the best conference in the SEC. You want to play at the best school, you know, in Coach Orgeron's eyes and mindset, you know, in the SEC. You're going to come in and have immediate opportunity to play and learn, you know, behind Rashad Lawrence. And you're going to get coached up by one of the best position coaches in America, and Coach Johnson, also along with Coach Orgeron himself. And then they're able to get tutelage from, you know, what I feel is one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, and Coach Dave Aranda. So, you know, he's selling them that. And then plus, you know, proximity. You know, because Ishmael is a homebody. You know, he doesn't, you know, driving here and going there and all these different places. And, you know, that's not Ishmael. I know when he went to Hawaii, you know, for the All-Star game, you know, I talked to him, like, you know, Coach, I'm ready to come home. You know, so, I mean, he's, you know, Coach Orgeron, you know, is selling him that. And also, too, is, you know, this special class of 19, you know, that they are putting together with Cardale Thomas and Derek Stingley and Trey Palmer and Peter Parrish and some of the other guys, you know, that LSU has already signed and have committed. So, you know, he and Ishmael sees that, you know, the potential, you know, that's going to be there for LSU. So, you know, Coach Orgeron is doing a fantastic job.
And we'll get one on Devontae Lee here. In terms of positions, right, where everybody sees him playing, might seem clear-cut to you, but I know there are some that at least have looked at him at the cornerback spot, right, and going both ways. But according to his coach, no, it's going to be offensive skill position.
You know, it's not only him, but it's winding down. And, you know, Devontae, I want to say he's pretty much done locked in on his final three schools and the three that he's going to be breaking everything down with in these next couple of weeks. But as far as, you know, his recruitment, you know, everything's been smooth. You know, he's gathered a bunch of information, you know, from the places that he's been at. And, you know, he'll sit down with his family and these next couple of days or, you know, this week, you know, they'll sit and they'll come up with their final decision. And he's excited about it. You know, he's ready to get this process over with. And, you know, once he puts his name on the dotted line, you know, he'll start working out, you know, for football, because right now he's playing basketball too. So once he gets, you know, that signature on that piece of paper, and he sends it off, and they send him back, you know, workouts and all that good stuff, you know, he'll get started with that. So, you know, his process is getting ready to come to an end, and he's excited about it and ready to get it over with.
And one more now from Zephaniah Powell, A-Meet High head coach. He's going to preview an event tomorrow, and the time has changed a little bit. Again, you're just now joining us because of some scheduling on the Deuce. It's going to be a 12:45 p.m. announcement for Sobsher and for Lee. But right here, Powell says, yeah, the place is going to be jumping. The auditorium is going to be crazy with this huge coming-to-town circus.
It's going to be phenomenal. You know, a bunch of people in our community and friends and family in our school, you know, they're going to be here. You know, ESPN, you know, they're coming to shoot it live. So, I mean, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy.
So my prediction for what's going to happen tomorrow, I feel pretty good about three of the six spots being occupied. Feel pretty good about Moehampton. Now, what happens as things go through the wash of the MLB draft? That's future LSU problems. You got to sign him now. Too good. You take the chance. Baseball/football, you just take the chance, period. So Moehampton will be one of the signatures tomorrow. Devontae Lee, again, these are my takes, my projections for tomorrow. Devontae Lee at wide receiver will be signing on the dotted line tomorrow. Sonny Finua, who committed Sunday morning on the tail end of his OV to Baton Rouge, an edge rusher out of Mesa Community College, he'll be one of the signatures tomorrow. So I think LSU fans can go to bed tonight and feel pretty good about getting to 22. It's that path afterward, getting closer and nosing up potentially to 25, that there's going to be some unrest about. Yeah, I think we could all agree on that. I don't have a tremendous feeling about Ishmael Sobcher. That's because I'm leaning on the wisdom of those that follow it closer than me. And yeah, I'm talking about Sonny and Shea and Billy for Go247, Mike Scarborough, who gave us great insight Friday for TigerBait.com. And so for me, how they fill those other spots is going to be a bit of a question mark. If they could find a way to hit on a Charles Moore type, that would go a long way. That would change the way that they move forward with that other spot or two, right? JUCO transfer, whatever way that they want to fill the spots, that would change things. Jay Ward in the secondary, maybe. But I see how LSU gets three of their six tomorrow. But I'll just parrot exactly what Shea said. He thinks that they end tomorrow at 23, at best at 24. So Shea thinks they sign four or five tomorrow. I think or five is Sobcher. So who is that fourth going to be? We'll find out. It could be Moore along the defensive line. Could be Ward in the secondary. Could be a tight end, Garmin Randolph. But something tells me that LSU doesn't sign Randolph and that they're not going to try to stay in the Ray Parker sweepstakes anymore, at least not this time around. That might be somebody who bounces back around circa 2021 or something like that. So I could see LSU getting to three or four. Shea says four or five. We'll see. They find a way to 24. Sobcher will be one of them. They'll be the number three ranked class in the country, which would be phenomenal. Without Sobcher, they'll probably still be the number five class in the country, maybe the number four class in the country. And that's pretty darn good. As I told you earlier, I think that would be enough because of where you added the quality to compete with the Bamas and the A&Ms of the world moving forward. As far as the Raging Cajuns are concerned, filling significantly less spots. Significantly less. And so they've got an opportunity to bring in maybe one final player. I know for a while they were big on the kid that was coming out of, I believe it was Iowa Western. So we'll see exactly which way the Cajuns land. I do know this, if all the cards are in play, as I'm kind of expecting them to be now, tomorrow's show should include an interview with Billy Napier. So we're going to do our best to do a few things on tomorrow's show that I think will be timely and really important. Number one, like I said, Cajuns fans should hear directly from Billy Napier. Number two, Ed Orgeron is scheduled for a press conference right as my show is set to begin at 4 o'clock. And so the way we would play that is to give you live updates, let you know what's going on via Twitter, and then try to get one of the reporters that's in the room aboard the show, maybe around 5:15, once those interviews have come and gone. So we're going to have a lot to get to tomorrow. Not only hearing straight from the horse's mouth when it comes to Cajuns recruiting, we're going to let you know about LSU recruiting, how they both finish up National Signing Day and the class of 2019. We're going to have our interview with Brian Snow at 4:30. National look at college basketball, national look at the SEC and where LSU fits into the pecking order. So, yeah, I know. Only had 2 hours today. We've only got two tomorrow. We'll probably be even busier on a hump day. Got to make sure that we cover all of our bases when it comes to National Signing Day and recruiting. As we're signing off today, two guests. They've been dynamite just about every Tuesday for us. Want to continue to thank Cody Worsham as LSU basketball continues on a run two and hopefully through a good bit of the postseason. Cody will be with us Tuesdays at 4:30. And Shea Dixon, we changed up our schedule a little bit today. We tried to be a little more interactive. We didn't go two segments, but the intel was still on point and dynamite. So my thanks again to Cody Worsham, Shea Dixon, our callers, our listeners, and those who engaged on social media, except for those who said LSU needs to score more runs than the other team to get to the College World Series. I'm not thanking you, but the rest of you, you are thanked, as well as the famous Clint D. I'm Ben Love, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, Tiger Rag Radio, next on 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.